right, everybody, welcome back to another wonderful episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants with an extremely special guest, someone who I have dearly missed having on the other end of this microphone. You might know him as the co-producer, co-founder, co-host, but not for a while, of this lovely podcast, the one and only Mr. Mo Bat. Welcome back to the show.
I'd rather describe myself as co-ghost.
Co-ghost.
But hi, nice to be back.
Dude, we have so much to catch up on. I know, like, particularly my mom asks so often when you're going to be back. And I was trying to look it up. I don't think I had the time to look back into our catalog and see what was the last show that you were actually on. I think it's been more than half a year. Unless there was like one special one in between.
There could actually be, because let me think about it. On your birthday, we talked about me returning probably, and that didn't happen until now. So I guess it must have been before, right? Quite a while before that. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh man. Okay. So I know already as far back. Oof. Okay. That's already as far back as October. I did a rerun July 28th, and so that's as far back as. That's crazy. Ali Reza returns. Okay, were you on when Ali returned for his second interview?
Yeah.
You were. Okay.
I think so. Shit. I'm super sorry, but I'm not sure, but I guess so.
I wouldn't have put it in the title. I remember summer of last year I had this horrible experience in Italy. And I think since then, for sure, we haven't had you. Bonus episode. I have a bonus episode here. I don't even know what I did here. I think it's like 5 minutes long.
Did you say bonus or boners?
Boners episode. Well, if it was the boners episode, you were definitely on that one. Because I am but one boner alone. Back since May. I mean, I to the America trip in spring last year, I remember I interviewed Matt alone. I interviewed Josh and Bruno alone. Ah, Lord of the Podcast, Return of the Bat. That was May 12, 2022.
Oh, shit.
And I think, unless someone can correct us, I think that's the last one you've been on. I think it's been almost a year.
Yeah.
Which is really, isn't it crazy how like blindingly fast that went?
Yeah, I just thought about it. It might be pretty embarrassing if somebody now gets to us and it's like, hey, guys, what is it with you? Like, Mo's been there in September, but we just both don't remember.
Yeah, probably
that
there
could
is,
happen.
There has to be.
Sorry in advance.
Yeah, sorry in advance if we. I'm looking at the titles here on our distro page, but nothing really gives me the impression that we had a conversation. I don't remember, like, there's a couple, like, I know Culture Clash is something I did alone because it was part of it was similar to a radio show I had that week, and I didn't have a lot of time to prep a real show, so I just kind of shared the same topic on both.
Just raged out for 90 minutes.
Pretty much. Germanisms, I did that. Germanisms, Americanisms, I did those alone because I did those on TikTok so that I could have footage to post. And then, yeah, it doesn't matter. But I think there maybe we're missing one or two, but I think since May, you haven't been like a consistent voice on here. But that's what I want to, I mean, you know, we can jump into whatever you want first. I have a few. I think the last time we hung out a week or so ago there, I have a list here of a few things I think I told you about on my end and a few things maybe I didn't tell you about yet that I want to definitely chat about. But then also, I think what's most interesting for probably people who listen regularly is what's been going on with Mo freaking Bat Shida.
Dude, do you also have this, like, okay, this might be the most basic thing ever, but like since the pandemic, this state of mind where you feel like there's so much, but at the same time, so little happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, it feels like that's it somehow. No. Like last time I've been here, if you say it's been May 22, I've been coming out of unemployment and starting as a freelancer, and then I I got into the state where you just because you're young and you're new in this business and you're on your own, like as a freelancer, you basically are happy for any opportunity, every gig, every job that's been that lays there for you, that somebody might offer to you, and you don't say no to anything. You're just happy that you get work to do and you get money coming in, because you don't know for sure if it's going to be the same amount next month, etc. And I really jumped into that and was like maybe also stressing myself a little bit too much about it. And so I've been working quite a lot for different media outlets, mostly TV and you could say online or web journalism, whatever. And it's been nice, quite a lot of experiences, but also like then to a little bit fast forward in last fall, I realized, okay, it's getting to a point where it's too much, and I'm just like chasing time too much. Like I overbooked myself basically, and I'm running behind on so many aspects. Like I don't have enough time for all the jobs I thought I could do.
Right.
And obviously that also affects your like social life, or like when you're younger in this triangle, like work, social life, and sleep, you'd rather like tend to reduce sleep time than like social life or anything work related. And so I needed to find a balance there, and then I quit on some jobs, which sounds pretty hard, but there's nothing bad happened there. It's just that I realized that that's too much for me, and I cannot do that right now because it's also going into a direction I don't want to go to.
Yeah,
but it's still been nice. And so I quit there and had the opportunity to start something new for my like main employer, which is Bayerischer Rundfunk, since last May, actually.
What a coincidence. And
what a coincidence. And that's been pretty nice. And since then, I also feel like I was able to have enough space in my head again to also like restructure. Sounds very technical, but basically that's what I did. Like restructured my time and my time for like social life and for sleep and like the whole package. Like basically what's been happening is growing up.
I mean, like with this extra work into these different branches of media, you know, are you getting, you said you were getting more into like video journalism. Is that something that you wanted to do from the moment you started studying media and journalism? That is your dream to be more of an on-screen presence for a major network, or do you prefer being more of a research behind the scenes audio guy?
That's
is that the big question basically?
That's a big question, or it's not the big question, but it's a big question I often ask myself, and I still don't have a clear answer to that.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about this for quite a while now, because also my whole volontariat, like this 2-year like traineeship thing that you do as a journalist, that I did, which was like called cross media. So I did radio, TV, and everything in between. And I was always thinking about like, am I tending more in this direction or that direction? Do I have to decide here? And the reality showed me, like the reality in a journalistic workplace these days, that you actually don't really have to decide, because more and more like outlets are looking for people that are flexible enough to work in different setting and different ways of output. And for me, it's still like I enjoy both. I have enjoyed the times I had so far, like in front of the camera. I also enjoyed, or what I enjoy right now is like I'm developing a new format for BR, can't tell you too much about it.
Ooh, right saucy. Now, but I'm, nice.
But that's something like I also
it's an OnlyFans.
Realize
isn't it?
Again,
it's an OnlyFans. That PBR.
Exactly, it's an OnlyFans. That I realized again that I enjoy like developing and planning and like more of the creative work in the background. And at the end, like my answer to that question is that I just really feel this very strong thing that made me fall in love with this job, like, or with the journalism in general.
Yeah.
Which is telling stories.
Yeah.
And I've never been such a great like fictional storyteller, or as you are a songwriter with another level of like abstraction.
Okay. But, yeah. Yeah.
So the good thing for me is in journalism, you don't have to, like, you don't have to create the stories. The stories are there.
You just have to find them.
You have to find them, and then have your approach on it.
Right.
And
which isn't easy. I still love, it really isn't easy to do that.
And I still love that. And so far, I enjoy like telling stories, sitting in front of a microphone, just like in this setting, or maybe also in front of a camera, but also like. Digging down in some kind of rabbit holes for research for 2 days, and then like creating a structure for a script for something.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, maybe that's sort of a beautiful thing to sort of consider for our generation. I mean, I say our generation, even though you're a good stretch younger, but I feel like in our collective youth, it seems like a perfect opportunity where we are in 2023 to not actually have to so strictly choose between those types of positions anymore. Now people create, so many people make entire livings and make entire industries out of whatever kind of creative outlet or media or presentation that they want, whatever makes them happy. You see, I mean, this is definitely outside of what you and I do strictly, but you see people who say, well, what I really want to do is grow my YouTube channel as a streamer, or for example, or make a Twitch account and blend those networks and build an audience. And then maybe they make a podcast with it. So then they have audio and they have visual and they have maybe they have a separate thing because they have a hobby for crime. So they have like a true crime TikTok series, you know, and you can basically say, I mean, studied or not studied, kind of what you prefer to do, and in your case that's telling stories, you don't really have to, I mean, maybe in Germany a little bit, but in general you don't really have to choose between strictly on-screen, you know, journalism, like being the face of the story, being the, oh man, what's the guy's name who broke the Woody Allen story? Rowan, he wrote the book, oh man, Ronan Farrow. You can be like the you know, the pretty face on screen who like broke the story, or being the research guy or the audio guy who tells the 6-chapter podcast about the crime that Bavaria never saw coming or something, you know. Or in your case, you know, most likely a great, great sports story, because that's more of your passion, right?
Yeah, that's also something that I'm kind of, how do I put this? Like, thinking about again, like rethinking,
reconsidering it, yeah.
Reconsidering or rethinking, like, does sound a little bit too hard, because I still have this passion for it. But what I also realized during the past year is that I need to get out of sports, not completely, but I also need something else. Like, I need a little bit of a mix. I also need other topics again besides.
I get that.
Besides all the sports stuff, and especially all that, because like sports journalism also means most of the time at these bigger outlets, like just you have this hustle of life all the time, whether you're broadcasting something yourself or not, but you're running from live event to live event, and there's this highlight, and then there's something like, I don't know, Super Bowl, important Bundesliga game, soccer Champions League, whatsoever. And it's from event to event to event to event, the whole calendar through. And yeah, I also need something else again. And
it takes, I think doing sports journalism to that extent takes a really particular type of person. You know, they have to have this constant burn And then, like you said, to chase that hustle. And it, you know, I think it's a perfect moment for you in your life and your age and stuff, and changing, reconsidering what you study or what you want. That is exactly what being in your 20s is all about. I changed my mind, I don't know how many times. I mean, I'm early 30s, but I still have moments of like, is this particular interest of mine something worth devoting, you know, X amount of time to try and make some, not just making money out of it, but making, is it going to make me happy? Is it something I can really, you know, sacrifice putting, you know, so much time into? And I think it's good that you are so self-aware that you can say you've studied sports journalism up to this extent, or you've worked so many years in it, and that you aren't telling yourself that you're stuck or that you owe anybody anything. Because that's very easy to do as well, is to feel guilty. Sure. To feel guilty, like, oh, I've been, you know, friends with, let's just put a name out there, like Max. I've been friends with Max in the sports journalism community for 7 years, and we always talked about, you know, working for whatever, ESPN together. I'm just being stereotypical.
Yeah.
But you have this, you know, passion and this dream and this community. It's very easy. I mean, I'm a sensitive guy. It's easy on my end for sure to feel that I can't change that because I would be, someone's relying on me, you know, to stay in that.
Yeah, and you would feel kind of, what do you say, like ungrateful?
Right, yeah, like, oh, yeah, exactly. That's, you know, I know that stems from my dad. I talked about this a lot before, but like when my dad wanted me to be like a really great athlete, you know, yeah. Now that I'm older, I can reflect on all the effort that he made was actually, you know, I see he had, his heart was actually in the right place. He just wanted to give the best support he could. That's the only way he knew how to do it. Yeah. But it was so intense and so much, you know, that my brother quit when he was in seventh grade or something. So from elementary school on through high school, I kind of didn't want to do it, but I felt like I had to, you know. And then I had to like push through and push through and push through. And it wasn't until I was a junior in high school and I did it on his terms. Like I had to wait until it was fall, in like November, when the weather's cool, when the practices are less difficult. When the games are, you know, with a few hundred people and bright lights and the marching bands, like, yeah. You know, I had to do it under his umbrella of rules. Like, you can do it if you really think you still want to do it when it's fun. And so I did. I, like, basically counted down the days. And it really hurt me. I was really scared to do it. Because I felt like maybe I'm being ungrateful or feeling guilty that he's put so much money and time and stuff. And he had such a... You know, the way he would talk about me to his friends as being this like rising athlete or this like super strong, fast, powerful person. He didn't really talk about me or Bruce in any other context that positively, as far as I know. You know, he wasn't like, oh, Bruce is a great, you know, painter or something. It was just like, man, he would have been a great tight end, you know. And so that's probably where that stems from today. If I get stuck into a commitment with something that I'm not so passionate about, you know, it's good that you're not letting yourself fall into that unhealthy trap.
Yeah, true. But also, I feel like that is still like a very different situation that you described. But because in my situation, and it's good that it is that way, I'm not that deeply like involved or nearly as deeply involved like emotionally, etc. Because it's not a kind of family situation, but still a work situation.
True, yeah. It wasn't the best connection there.
Especially because in this business, like most of the people working there together are freelancers. So there's not even this thing like you are this one kind of community because you're all like in this, on the same boat because you work together and you're all employed there, but people come and go every day because they're all just freelancers. And so that was not too hard, I must say.
Basically, you're like, Jordan, chill out.
it was still a tough decision. And
like, sure, yeah.
It was still the kind of, I still had the kind of questions that you mentioned that you ask yourself, like, do I need to do this because I owe somebody something? Or also, like, am I, if I leave this now, am I missing a big chance here? Right. I'll regret that later. And stuff like that, obviously, you ask that yourself. But Yeah. It was also mostly about just, it's that about like getting back more self-awareness and also self-esteem in some form.
Some more control, like, or like
taking back power in a certain way. Like,
yeah,
okay, I've got, and it's been a privilege. I've gotten into this whole sports journalism thing, and it felt like I must say, before, I know what I worked for so hard through the past years, and why I can do this, what I do now, but still it felt like everything has been coming to me.
Yeah.
I've gotten into this, and then there was a friend of mine who said, like, hey, there's a job here, etc. And as I mentioned earlier, in this early stage, you don't say no to anything, and I wouldn't want to miss one of those opportunities. But it was just about time for me to make own decisions again, like actively thinking about, okay, do I want to do this, or is it just one more opportunity that is, and that's a nice situation, that's a big privilege that's coming up, and I say yes to it just because it is there.
Right.
Yeah. So mostly that was about that, and I realized I also need like some other topics in my work again, other than sports, and so I'm just trying to go a little bit in that direction while still trying to do the kind of tasks and jobs within sports journalism that I still enjoy.
Yeah.
So just like changing the mix a bit.
So if this particular path is something you're not completely fading out, but just seeing yourself going away from a bit, what is the angle or the position that is this sort of new glowing light for you? Like, what is this thing now that you're working towards that you maybe now have more time to chase?
That's a thing. Like, I am still in a kind of process, because I'm not completely sure about that.
Oh, okay.
And it's not like that I'm leaving one thing because I have this clear vision or this great goal lying somewhere else.
Right. Right. It's just more about, you know, what you're knowing now what you don't want, but it's not so much that you know exactly what you do want.
Yeah, exactly. And parts of what I'm doing in sports, I still very much enjoy. And so, since I don't know if there's something else that I want so much that I like leave that one thing behind and focus on a greater goal or something, what I'm trying to do is like have my eyes open again and see what other possibilities there are.
Yeah.
For me, and while still doing the things in sports journalism that I enjoy, and since I'm still kind of a freelancer, I can build my month, my work days, however I want is too much, because obviously there's two sides of it, and you always need to discuss with your employers what works out, etc., whatsoever.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I feel like what I would enjoy right now is like a 50-50 thing, and like 50% of my time like doing the things in sports journalism I enjoy, just like right now developing this format I do for them and stuff like that, or going out as a reporter or video journalist at times, and also in the news desk, the shifts I do there, that's all nice. And then the other 50%, like, look for something new, and that's where I'm a bit in a, I would say like kind of trial and error phase, because I can imagine so many things. Like, there are topics laying in the great field of economics that I find very interesting, as well as in when talking about cultural things and arts, just like politics, and there are so many different topics that I could imagine doing, so that I'm just trying to use that time I have a little bit more of now to find something to try out, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, I think that's, you're in the perfect position to do that right now. Still in your 20s, still in between, you know, you're a freelancer, so you're not locked into any certain position for a certain amount of time, giving you less free time to chase something new. And I think it's knowing what you don't want or knowing what you want less is equally as important as knowing what you do want. It's just as important, you know? So that's good, man.
Sure, and I think I generally, I don't know how it is with you, but I feel like I'm a person that works that way in a little bit, like with many things. Life, if life gets me down or shitty things happen or whatever, I always, like my default like operating mode then is to come from that, like to analyze and see like, okay, now I've realized I don't like this and I don't want that and I don't want to go that way. So
yeah,
let's see from here what other options are left.
Yeah, it's funny how often that works out in life, like even in personal situations or professional, the whole range of sort of the human experience. When there's any more than one option of a way you can do or exist or connect to something, more often than not, there is a moment where you realize, oh, I actually don't like that. I don't think I want to do that anymore. Yeah. It's almost easier to go, I don't want to do that, as opposed to, I think I really want to do that, you know?
But I guess it's also just like an evolution, everything.
Yeah.
You know, like trial and error. I guess our ancestors at some point probably have tried to pet a lion or something.
Right.
Got eaten, realized, so that's not an option.
You could just see like a caveman with a clipboard like, tiger, not safe. Okay, well.
Yeah, exactly.
Now let's try the bobcat.
Next. What do we have here? A mammoth.
Like, well, we actually don't know if they're safe. Like, okay. If they're not safe, can we eat them? You can try. We haven't tried that yet. No, but that's cool, man. I'm glad to hear that you're, you know, changing things and finding things. And it, you know, it makes sense that it takes time. And you have this, your other podcast, She Happens. Has that also kind of been on a break for a while now? Or have you been taking a break from it? Or how does that work now?
Basically, yeah, we've had some breaks during the season because of different reasons. I feel pretty sorry for that. There's been like, one, because normally we also like release weekly and do that since October and now in January. And also this month there have been a few weeks where we couldn't bring out an episode. And that's not so nice, but there's like different kind of things like timing. And a lot of like this season, what I have to realize is that we really also have to reconsider some things there, like not in terms of thinking about whether it still makes sense to make the podcast or something
right,
like that. But I have to realize the 2 years before, the two seasons we've done until then, I've been able to do this in my, like, on my work time. It was part of my volontariat, the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And now I don't have that time anymore.
Is it not a situation like Artsy Fartsy where I can continue it on my own until you return? Like, is Vincent's like not, this isn't something against him, but like, is it not the same situation? Like, is he, does he not have the capability to do a solo episode, or does he not want to? It's also totally normal.
Like, first of all, there are, because there's also Corinna, so there would be two, and that works out sometimes. Like, if one of us can't do it, that the other two that are left make an episode. But the thing is, the whole, like, post-production, et cetera, all runs through me.
Okay, yeah.
That makes sense. Where I'm the only one that's capable of it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And so, yeah, unfortunately, we had some breaks, but also we had some great episodes this season, in terms of we had great guests and really interesting stories where I just felt like I learned so much through preparing and recording these episodes, and also our community has grown again, and that's a nice thing. And so yeah, I really feel bad for a few weeks we had for different reasons, just like timing or
but I mean, it happens,
all sorts
it
of happens. Stuff that happens, and that's the point where like, we also had where we tried to get a little bit of money in, just to be able to afford more time, basically, for us to do it. Because that's the whole thing. Like, if you, this project is based on a concept that depends on one person being me, putting in, like, I would say around 2.5 days of work into each episode.
Right.
And obviously, I cannot do that right
no.
now.
No, no,
and,
no, no.
And so, yeah, that's a thing. And I feel sorry for the weeks that we had to pause. But I also feel like we have a great community that forgives us and likes us. And
sure, man. They understand that she happens.
has enjoyed the other episodes. But I don't know, and I don't think that the... I'm missing a word here. The intersection between the She Happens listeners and the Artsy Fartsy listeners might be. I don't think it might be that. That
I don't
many.
Think there's a huge crossover. maybe one.
This
or
might
two.
Be this might be the worst ever podcast cross promotion. Dude, you're having this other podcast, but it's not really coming out lately. Yeah.
It's all in German and it's a lot about skiing. No, but that's I wasn't sure what the case was with that one, but I knew that probably you also had to take some time. I guess I was just testing to see if you were like, oh, I would never miss a week if She Happens ever. Dude, nothing could stand in the
I'm
way
doing,
of that.
I'm doing my best to not do that.
I'm kidding. No,
but
man,
now
but
we talked
cool.
so much about me and you. Like it seems like you have a real agenda because there's been happening very much on your side lately.
I mean, I've definitely talked about a good bit of it on here on some solo episodes, but I think there was some... I made a little list, and I wasn't sure if we had already talked about it or not. Have I told you about the movie? I have. I still can't publicize too much of anything about it, but I do have my first... So I've been to the studios there at the Bavaria Studios, and I got sort of tested for how I'm going to look. For the clothing and for the like the hair and makeup and stuff, and I think it's gonna be I'm gonna look super different, man. Like no glasses, they're gonna definitely change my facial hair. They're gonna do some funny stuff with my hair, and I like the way I'm dressed. So I really hope they have some good that I get. You know, I hope they capture it so that my mom and dad can go like, look at this crazy mofo right here. And
that would have been a great tight end.
Yeah, he would have been a great tight end, man. and then I go back the day that this episode comes out. I go back there again in the morning time, thankfully. I believe I get to meet the actors, like the first on the call sheet type. I hope so. I think so. It makes sense because they're having like a read through. So I got an email yesterday with the most recent draft of everything. And it's so funny. I feel like I studied film and I know enough people in film that I should pretty much know all of the works of how things function. But every once in a while I get an email with some information that I just don't understand. Like I got this email. What they do, maybe they do this in other industries too, but when you get different drafts of the screenplay, they don't call them draft one, draft two, draft three. They give them a color. So they say like blue draft, yellow draft, green draft, white draft. So that you can all stay up to date on which one you have. You say, oh, you got blue. Well, blue's the new one or whatever. And I think there's another code behind that, but it doesn't really matter. You can just know which color you have. And what I got was like five copies of it with the slightest alterations. One of them has like different things highlighted, but it's not like I'm a character with lines. If I was a character with lines, I would have my dialogue highlighted, you know, but I don't have dialogue. So some things are highlighted that are nothing that I think are for me at all. And then in a different version with a different title, the title is like a code or something, then other things are highlighted that I don't know what that means either. So I'm just hoping that I show up. I hope I show up Thursday and they're not like, well, I hope everyone's completely prepared. We all gave you your homework on Monday or whatever. but I don't think, I'm really happy that I'm just invited to that. I don't think I have too much to contribute to the read through, but I hope I get to meet the people and I'm really excited to be there. Like all I'm doing in the last couple of weeks every bad day, every boring minute, every time that I'm not completely distracted with something, my brain goes to, man, I can't wait to be on that set. Like, I'm so excited to do it. And I talked to my parents recently and I told them, you know, it could be that that they just cut me out. It could be that I'm not even seen. And for me, just the chance of like being able to do the job is so exciting either way. You know, it's more about like, I get to be on a film set again, like with with real money in it and real actors. And like, that's so, that's, I can't think of anything more exciting to me than that.
And I really can understand that, because I had kind of a similar experience where it was, for me, it was just about being there at a certain event. Time to get back to an artsy fartsy classic. Do you remember that one time we played that festival in the United Kingdom?
Oh, I believe it was a little known town called Brighton.
I don't want to get too deep into that, but
I love that the first episode you're back in almost a year and we said Brighton. I love it.
No, I we don't have to get too deep into that, but for me, basically, it was just the experience. I've always played music, and obviously, as a teenager, I had these like dreams of doing this professionally and on big stages and whatsoever.
Sure.
And then at some point, like I didn't like, I felt like good with doing other things in my life professionally, etc. But still, for me, that was this great like highlight for me, and for same, that passion, just for me being able to be in that professional surrounding and at this event.
Well, dude, and all the context around it too. Like, it wasn't just that we had a great concert in a new place; it was that we got flown to a different country. Yeah. We got put up it wasn't like a 5-star hotel or something, but we got put up for free, which is amazing. We got paid to do it. We got to, you know, eat really cool, exciting food. We got like some really authentic fish and chips. We got to play two different festival slots.
Yeah.
You know, we got to party each night. I mean, that's like the rock dream, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you have all these industry people around you, and there's a lot happening. And I guess it's the music equivalent to like being at a film production for real.
That's the closest I've, like, that Brighton Festival is the closest I've ever felt to, you know, like the American indie rock dream is probably playing South by Southwest, you know, and it's the same exact setup. You have like all these venues down different major streets, and then, you know, can pop in and out. And I've always wanted to play there. And there's a few other festivals in the States I've always wanted to play. I didn't even play like the major festivals in New Orleans, you know, like I didn't build enough audience to even play. Because like Jazz Festival is a great big festival, and they have so many, dude, thousands of bands playing all shapes and sizes of venues. I don't remember if I did like one acoustic slot on one night in one bar. That might have been the case, but I didn't really, you know, it wasn't connected to like the whole, you're playing Jazz Fest. You know, like I have so many friends who do that in their bands, and I've always been jealous. But Brighton was that one time where I thought like, this is something I could do the rest of my life.
Yeah. You
know? I totally understand what you mean.
And I hope like, you will have a kind of similar experience on the film set.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, I have to remind myself that it is a lot of waiting around, but I think I'd much rather wait around on a professional film set and see how the director works and stuff. And the fact that it's all in English, it'll feel kind of like I'm back home for a little while, you know?
True. I haven't even thought about that yet.
They will all speak English. Like even when we did the test shoot, where I was the only actor in the room full of German crew, they all still practiced their English. So they spoke to each other. So for me, it was like, I can understand everything. I feel completely relaxed. I didn't have to worry that, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it's funny when you're in a room and you're the only one who struggles to get everything. Sometimes you wonder if they're talking to you or if they're talking about you, not in like a high school way, like, oh, they're talking about me, but maybe they're wanting something different out of me that if I could just hear them, I could show some initiative and just do it without them needing to be like, right, okay, I'm going to ask him. You know, if I just heard them saying like, well, maybe if he turned his back a bit more, then I could hear it and be like this? You mean like this? You know, like I could already try and be the best version of what they need. So anyway,
but that's kind of like the arts of arts immigrants essence there. Like this being is a very special moment for you, not just because you're being on a film set, but you are in a professional surrounding, completely in English again, which hasn't really happened to you in years, I guess.
No, this might be the first time it's ever happened. I mean, not to say that, of course, many, if not almost all Germans that I've interacted with since I've lived here have spoken English to me, but to be in a completely English setting,
yeah,
I think this is the first time, which is crazy. It's like 7 years. That's really wild. And then did I tell you about this this Bavarian, like, We Are the World song?
No. What? Who's going to be the Dylan character?
Oh, that's exactly who I told my dad on the phone. I was like, that's the one I want to be. Dude, so I got this, like a few weeks ago, I got this email from someone I didn't recognize, and it was all in German. And sometimes because of Facebook, like because of Meta owning WhatsApp or, you know,
did they want
website,
your credit card information or anything?
Well, dude, I mean, they might as well have asked, because my first thought was, oh, this is spam. And my first thought was like, I get like ridiculous emails from like, it'll be like Emma at C2349XY.net or something. And it'll be like, Jordan, like at Jordan Prince, we, you know, not even my name, but just my Instagram handle. Like, we love your content. We'd love to set you up with our production or whatever. So there's always spam like that. And this was a huge email, huge, like two pages. A lot of the different things highlighted, a lot of like referencing what they were. It's so confusing. And I was like, I don't really want to read this. And so just as a, to protect myself in case it was something from like the government, I sent it to Efi. I was like, can you just look at this and see if it's real? And she read it and she was like, oh, it looks like this production company in Munich wants to hire you to sing in this group of local musicians in the style of We Are the World. To sing against AfD, to sing against AfD, like in this political thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, She was like, I think you should respond. I think you should see what they want. So I wrote them back. Usually I try to write back in German and kind of be respectful and like, you know, just explain I'm not so good at, but this, for some reason, I just went full English. And I just wrote back like, hey, I got your email. Thank you so much for writing. I'm sorry, I don't quite understand everything you're asking. Could you send me the form again or send me something in English? And they responded the same day. They're like, of course, Jordan, thank you so much for getting back with us. The director of the project, Hans, wants to call you about it. And I was like, oh, okay. All right, yeah, he can call me. You know, I just preferred like a email. But then the guy called, and it turns out it's this like major German film and television director. His name is Hans Steinbichler. Hans Zimmer. It's Hans Zimmer, man. What the fuck? Turns out this guy is a pretty good musician, man. Hans Steinbichler. And he, you know, do you know that German series Das Boot?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he did that. That's his show. From what I can tell, I mean, that's what his IMDb says.
And he's doing a Bavarian We Are the World against AfD.
So, like, he called me, and he's, I will be totally honest, he's so nice. He's so, so, so nice. Super nice guy. He called and basically was like, hey, I saw your Daily Bread video with you in the choir. Because he was just randomly researching local artists. He was, like, Googling Munich rock, Munich rap, Munich whatever. And he found me through the Daily Bread video, which is really funny because I didn't even know that that's something people can discover. Like, I kind of, at this point, I feel like they have to find the German videos first and then they find out that I do other things. So that was kind of refreshing. And then he said he really liked my voice. He wanted me to do it. And the project is basically, he has hired a composer to write an original piece that like is basically inspired by what We Are the World was doing. Like, people all together, different faces, singing against or singing for a cause. And so he was like, we're going to have a meeting on Valentine's Day, which is really funny. Or maybe it was the day after. I remember thinking like, don't you guys have anything to do? Anything better to do? But they said, come down to the studio. Ironically or coincidentally, it's next door to David Reichelt's studio. So I've already been there before, and I didn't. It was, for me, it was funny. Like, oh, I know exactly where this is. And I went down and I met a few musicians that I have seen before. I don't know if you know this really cool, really fun black guy. His name's Steven. He plays Oh, he plays in a few different bands. Man, damn it. Now that I know him and I have him in my mind, but for some reason I can't think. He was in, I think he played with Inside Golden a few times. He played with, anyway, he's a great bass player and he plays a lot of mm-hmm. blues rock and stuff too. So I saw him, we hugged, and then I saw another musician that I recognized and we caught up a little bit. And this guy, Matthias, who is, I don't know if he's actually the composer of the song or just the producer, like just the engineer of the track, but he came in the room. And the funny part was I got to the studio, I saw these musicians, and I knew that I had missed some sort of like brief, you know, I missed like the explanation. So I was waiting for the director to come into the room and sort of retell me what's going on. Why are we at the studio now? Are we recording something tonight? Like, what's the deal? And this Matthias guy comes in the room and he says, "Hey, Jordan, do you want to sing something?" And in my mind, I thought he meant like a jam, like just for funsies. Like, do you want to sing anything in this room? There's guitars and piano, you know?
And you were starting like scatting.
Well, dude, I went, no. And I felt so rude later because then I realized what they were doing was I had missed the brief. So people were taking turns one at a time going to Matthias's room and singing a line of the song as a demo.
Ah.
So he was like, "Jordan, you must know what's going on. Do you want to come with me now? It's your turn if you want." And I was like, "No." And then later I saw him again and then I understood and I apologized and we had laughed about it. But then the director came in, explained everything to me, gave me the text sheets, showed me the song. They played like a demo of it on their laptop. And I checked it out. And then, because I don't really get every line, I can send it to you and show you. But it basically, it's very, you know, it is what it is. It's a song that's like anti-AFD. It's very, we are together. It's like gemeinsam. You know, we are like, and it's like different genders, different ages, different races, everything all together. Like we are, you know, we are the world. And they brought
me
in.
Did you wear huge sunglasses?
Yeah. I should have dressed like such a jerk. I should have come in there like such a pompous. I went to the studio. Dude, that would be the one chance for me to wear a leather jacket, yeah. And a red leather jacket. And nothing else. Just that, like one of those paper thongs you get at the massage parlor. And I went into the room and I sang a line. And then I asked the guy if I could try and translate it to English because one of the phrases was so many like ish and oosh sounds that it sounded like a bird struggling to feed its babies. You know, like I wasn't getting anything out. So we translated it and I tried it again and then it felt good. And then the Matthias guy was happy. So then I left and this weekend.
So you recorded the whole thing on that one meeting on Valentine's Day?
Just one line, just the one, like, okay. Just just one passage that I would sing alone. And but I didn't sing the chorus or anything yet.
Okay.
And just so they could put everyone together and see how the voices sound. And they called me this weekend and they said they were really happy with it. And I mean, they were super, 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 super nice. This guy, Martin, who was, I think he's the one of the producers. He's like running this whole thing kind of. And they booked me to come back to the studio next month at the end of this month and sing my line again, like, really professionally for the final version and then to sing on the chorus. And then on early March, they're going to film it. And I don't know what they're going to do with it, if it's just going to be for YouTube or if they plan to try and air that on TV or something. Mm-hmm. But it's paid. So, I mean, you know, it's funny. I'll do it. Why not? But it's, you know.
That's easy it is to buy you for political causes.
Well, dude, I told my mom this story on the phone the other day, but there's this great interview with this comedian, Eugene Levy. He's this great actor. And he said that one of his early jobs, he felt really stupid. He was like dressed in this dumb way. And he felt like, he's like, "I feel like such an a-hole." And he turned to this actor on the scene with him. And he's like, "Man, what are we doing here? Like, we look like assholes." And then the guy leans over and says, "You know, Eugene, it doesn't say asshole on the check, you know?" Which I think is such a good line. That's such a smooth way of saying, like, you're getting paid, so just shut up. Just do it, you know? And, you know, I don't, the only other names I knew on this list, I think, I don't know if she's confirmed for sure, but I saw her like headshot. It's like Amy or Ami Varning.
Don't know her.
You know, Amy Varning, Ami Varning. I think she's Amy Varning. I don't know. But it's Matt Austin's girlfriend. They tour together a lot.
Ah, okay.
And her dad's like a reggae Wally Varning.
Okay, you know? No.
They always have posters up in Munich. I feel like they're always playing like Ampere and stuff in Mufferhalle.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. So that's like this Gemeinsam song. That's just for me, it's such a funny experience. But that's been the most recent update, like besides the movie. But I feel like everything is just kind of waiting. Like I have this movie stuff coming, but I still have to wait. And like every day is sort of like just a sprinkle of information. Like, okay, Thursday you have this thing, but I don't know. You know, and that's fine. I don't know how long it's going to be or whatever. I can only just communicate, you know, my schedule as much as I can. And then the song should work out. And then otherwise, dude, like I'm waiting for this trip to America at the end of March. And then we'll be gone through May 5th.
That's crazy.
That's really crazy. And before that, we're moving into the new house. That's already less than 3 weeks away. I think it's like a little more than 2 weeks away.
Dude, I was thinking like there's been much happening lately on my side, but look at you, like song projects, movie projects, moving in the new house, US trip.
I mean, like the full house, package. Sure, like the house, sure, is a lot on the back end, but it's really funny how, like, I seem like what I'm doing now is I've prepared, a lot of radio shows in advance so that I don't have to record them in America. Mm-hmm. And what that means is now I'm at the end. Now the radio shows are prepared. And until this movie stuff starts or until the song starts or until we go to America, really the podcast is kind of the only thing, you know, like filling that time for real, which is just a few hours a week. So a lot of it is actually, I feel like, planning in advance, but then just waiting. And something about that is killing me right now. Something about just the waiting for something to happen. Yes, I know I have other things going on, and yes, there's a lot of things to do at the house, but I'm someone who gets this constant itch to work on something. And I know that that will come where maybe it even comes next month where I'm overwhelmed. Maybe even next month I'm like, man, I need a break. But in this moment, I've prepared everything so much that I actually will just have to wait
for
probably more than a week now.
And that can be the toughest thing.
Dude, I hate it. I hate it because I want to feed my time with something that, like, it may sound stupid, but not necessarily wanting to fill it with creating something. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to sit here and be like, I have to write a song or whatever. But I just need to feel like, okay, well, there's a podcast to do. I have to do two radio shows. I need to prepare this. I need to like record that. I like having this feeling of like, there's something to do. I should do it. Because otherwise I'm just at the house and sure, sweeping things up, framing photos, finishing some painting, decarpeting a floor, like that is work. But I feel less productive doing work like that than I do doing work at this desk, which is strange.
Yeah, but that's how do you they call it, like the I'm missing the philosopher here, sorry, but it's like homo faber, so the creating and no, like the, yeah, like the creating working human and the homo ludens, like the playing creative human.
What'd you call me?
No. Whatever, I don't know how that even came to my mind. What I wanted to say in the first place is I can really understand that, and I have the same issue and like terms of rotation of my thoughts in these kind of situations. Mm-hmm. So, but I also gotta say, like, the past hour or so has been really great for me. It's great to be back, and it's been really, I can tell you, making my day and probably also my week so far. I know, what is it, Tuesday? It's only Tuesday. Okay,
it's Tuesday.
I've worked
in
the weekend, so it's I'm shifted a bit. But
are you wrapping things up right now? Is this a wrap up?
Probably tending towards
that's all
it.
Right.
But I, just what I wanted to say.
You're busier
is like,
than me, so We're gonna do it how you can do it.
What I wanted to say is that this feels really, really good and kind of feels right. Just it feels like natural to be back here.
Dude, this show needs you. People are tired of hearing me rant for 45 minutes about not too much. Did you? I don't expect you to have listened to anything because it's really annoying for you to listen to it. But I did a whole episode and a half basically on just ranting about my feelings towards Toman.
Yeah.
I've been through that.
And dude. To save yourself from yourself. No. Joking here.
I need you to save myself from myself. Yeah, that's true.
I really want to be back more often, and I probably there could be weeks where I won't make it, but let's make this a thing again. This feels good.
Yes, please. Please, man. I mean, basically this time slot that we booked today works for me 99.9% of the time every single week.
Nice.
So if this time slot works, and if not, then you know, there's always one or two evenings a week where I can slip out, and then we can do something in person over drinks or something. There's always a time for me. You're busier than me, so we have to do it based on you. But I would say one last funny thing. So just because I mentioned Toma and I had all this, and I won't, for the listeners, I'm not going to bring it all back up. Mo knows everything, but like I had this whole drama and I felt really sort of like hurt by them and stuff and cheated. And I wrote them last month my final invoice for these demo TikTok videos. Mm-hmm. And so what's changed between January and February of this year is that I am officially no longer Kleinunternehmer, which mm-hmm. means that I made more than enough money last year to pass this limit where now I am a taxable freelancer. Now I have to send invoices with 7% on top. That money needs to go into a separate business account, and the taxes will simply collect that money, and I need to leave it untouched. And it's all, I had to set up a new bank account, and everything was a little annoying for a few days. But what happened was I was talking to my tax lady, this one who helps sort of make sure everything's in order. And she said, well, have you already sent invoices out for January of this year? And I said, yeah, I sent out 5 or 6. And she said, that's okay, but you have to rewrite them and you have to get the 7% added. So dude, that was writing an invoice. Not just, I had one invoice from Giovanni, which is like $200. So that was no problem. But I had to rewrite invoices for Neue Zupa, which for me felt super embarrassing because it's such a prestigious sort of film production company. I didn't want to like, excuse me guys, I'm so sorry, but can I please? I had to write them. M94.5, Ego FM, which everyone was super nice about that, and that was no problem. But the biggest issue for me, the one that I saved for last, was writing Toman again, because my only contact in almost 2 years of knowing them is this one woman. I don't have a contact to anyone at the accounting department to skip around her. I don't know anybody in any other departments to say, well, that's your job. I'm not going to bother her.
Yeah.
I'll just write the department. Every single other job has given me direct contact to someone else who's not them. Why would I write Mo about my accounting when you could say, oh, here's, you know, here, again, to use the name Max, here's Max, he does accounting. You know, she's the only one who never did that. It's like she doesn't trust me to like not bother them or something. So I had to write her again, and I had to explain my situation again. And it was, for me, I was so embarrassed because this email that they wrote me that really patronized me, I never responded to it. Mm-hmm. I just said like, that's it. Nothing's going to fix it if I write them how I feel about them.
Yeah.
You know, they can listen to this if they want. I don't care, but they're not going to. And so I just said like, just don't respond. And so the only email, the only correspondence she had gotten back from me since that email was like this super, I did it so formal. It was like AI wrote it. I was like, like hello, like no name, just hello, comma. I am no longer Kleinunternehmer. This means, unfortunately, I must add a tax to so-and-so. So then I had to send like a Stornorechnung, like a cancellation invoice mm-hmm. back to them to cancel out the money, then to make a separate new invoice that added the VAT on top, so that they sent the VAT, but with a clean invoice. And I had to do that for 6 different entities. And at the end, I was just so, man, I really hated that I had to communicate again with her. And basically, it's this, just like this faux kindness thing of like, happy to hear that things are da-da-da-da. Like, no problem over here on this end. And I just want to be like, I just want to but yeah, on the positive side of things, dude, I think I don't want to jump the shark here, but it could be that in the next month or so, I could reach 100,000 Instagram followers.
Ooh.
That's wild, man. That's really,
will they give you something then?
Wild.
Like an award or something?
I'd love to get like a nice little Instagram plaque. Wouldn't that be cool? Like the YouTube plaques that people get when they cross like millions of streams.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's probably not going to happen. Probably all I'll get is the disappointment that nothing changes.
But hey, you can like buy the certified like badge now, the blue one.
On Facebook, right? Or is it also for Instagram?
Also for Instagram. Like they just copied what Musk is doing at Twitter. I think it's 11.
But didn't they cancel that?
11
didn't
euros.
Didn't they cancel it? Cause it?
Yeah, Twitter did, I think, but I'm not sure. But Instagram wants to do that, as it seems, for like 11 euros per month. You can get your blue badge.
It's actually more for iOS. Isn't that ridiculous? It's yeah. Like 11 for computer and 15 for iOS, which doesn't even sound fair. Why wouldn't you want one payment for both checks? So does that mean if you go to my Instagram through an email click, you don't see it? And if you go on your phone, then you see it? At this point, like, I have applied for that blue check so many times, that if they're asking for people to pay for it now, I'm just not going to worry about it anymore.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And I'm going to assume that everyone's paying for it. Because it's just not... That's why I just put a crown after my name. I was like, I'd rather just have this crown, Jordan Prince, boom. The numbers are there.
Stay humble.
You know, it's all there.
Stay humble. Just a crown.
Stay humble, man. Bitch, be humble. Dude. Oh, yeah. Well, look, I understand you got to go. I'll leave you with one teased here. I think I told you last time I saw you that I have two, well, I have several new songs, but I have basically two very recent new ones that are really fresh. And I think I told you that our friend Giovanni has asked if he can produce them because he wants to basically test the waters of doing something different than electronic music. And he has great gear and stuff. So yesterday I recorded the acoustic, basically the acoustic skeleton of that song. It was really hard to record that because I haven't played enough or recorded enough of myself in so long. Usually I can do something like that in about 3 takes and to do it all clean. And I did it in like 14. It took so many chances to moving the mic, adjusting, starting it, messing up my fingers, replacing something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, sure.
But I finished it. I did it to the click. I sent it to him. I gave him the info. He loves it. And it could be that tonight, I have the chance to go over to his place and I'll sing into his really nice mic, into his really nice equipment. And then he'll have the acoustic foundation, the voice, maybe some harmonies, and then he's got the free range to build a song around it. And then maybe, who knows, maybe, I don't know, he's super busy, but maybe next month or by summer, I would have finally, since Simple Swimmer, I'd have a new single.
That'd be awesome, man.
That would be really cool, man. Yeah. That's a whole different podcast to talk about my relationship to music now, but...
But let's do that podcast next week or the week after.
Let's do that podcast. Yeah, because there's still, dude, like, there's so much to talk about, like the Dumont relicensing of 12 songs.
Sure.
Pop-up Records wrote me about Simple Swimmer statements, and I sent them a very interesting response.
you sent them a very interesting response.
Yeah, we'll talk
about
that.
That's a nice teaser.
Yeah, that's a good one. And yeah, I mean, new music on the way, supposedly, so. Yeah, man. There's a lot to talk about next. So let's try and do it. I'm not going to promise anything to the listeners if we can try next week, but you know, you didn't make any promises either. So if not next week, then the week after. We'll make it work.
We'll make it work. I want to try my best.
Nice, dude. Okay, well, I'll let you get back to it. We can kill the recording here and then say bye, but thank you so much for finding the time, man. It's been lovely having you back.
I really enjoyed it being back, and I want to be back more often. So talk to you very soon.
All right, buddy. All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, if you got anything out of it, if you had any fun, had a laugh, had a cry, anything at all, please go on over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. Give us a rating or a review or a comment, or just share it once on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever platform you prefer, even just sharing it over WhatsApp or iMessage or whatever Android is, to your friends. Anybody who you think would connect to this or feel something or enjoy it, you know, it really helps sort of affect the algorithm, and it really does help draw people to the show. All of our social media links are in the description. If you want to follow us on TikTok or Instagram, you know, commenting, liking things really helps people see what we do here. So hopefully we can have Mo on next week. I think that's going to be the plan. And otherwise, thank you as always for listening. You guys are the best, and I hope you have a great week. Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.